Welcome to the Travel Pulse Podcast, your go-to listening for everything travel. Here are your Travel Pulse hosts, Eric Bowman and Dan Callahan.
Happy Travel Tuesday, podcast listeners. It's Eric Bowman here, managing editor of TravelPulse.com, joined as always by my co-host, Dan, the man, Callahan. Dan, how you doing on this fine Tuesday?
Hello, everybody. Doing good, doing well. Thanks for joining us in for another episode.
Absolutely. We've got a great show lined up for you today. Today's interview segment coming up later on the show is hospitality and travel expert Anthony Melchiori, former host of Hotel Impossible on the Travel Channel. We'll be talking hotel industry, a little bit of New York travel as well. But, you know, we also have a new expo that a lot of travel advisors are going to want to tune into.
Absolutely.
Dan, tell us a little bit more about that.
Coming up this week on the East, September 23rd and 24th, we're going to be having another one of our ever so popular digital expos. Head over to virtualtravelevents.com where you can register for free. Both days, the 23rd and 24th of this week, you can join in and connect with some of the top suppliers. And this week is actually, and other travel agents as well. This week's expo is focusing on romance travel. It's going to be all about destination weddings and honeymoons, a very exciting, growing, very lucrative market for travel agents to be a part of. So come in and learn and go to webinars, chat with suppliers, chat with other agents. You can win a lot of cool prizes from Playa Hotels and Resorts is giving away a 3-night stay. Nassau Paradise Island in the Bahamas is also giving away something. A lot of good stuff that you can win in there. If you can't catch it these 2 days, you can always join on demand. You can go poke around and check out a lot of the different resources that are in there. It's all set up just like an actual trade show, only it's virtual. And you could just from the click of a few buttons, you can spend as long as you want in there, as little as you want. Go around booth to booth, participate in webinars, win some cool prizes, all about romance travel. So if you're looking to learn more about that or up your game in that market, definitely come in there. You can see a lot of presentations by industry experts, win great prizes, a lot of good stuff. So that's over at virtualtravelevents.com.
Should be a very fun event, Dan. Looking forward to it. And I'll be in the booth for the Travel Pulse podcast booth. Come and say hello if you're going to attend. But on to what is trending in the world of travel. Cruise news is once again hot, hot, hot. Last week, Senators Rick Scott and Marco Rubio introduced the Set Sail Safely Act in coordination with a private sector advisor committee to establish a maritime task force. But really, the most exciting cruise news we've had happened yesterday, Monday. The top cruise lines announced their health and safety protocols. Finally, we have the Healthy Sail Panel, which is the Norwegian Cruise Line and Royal Caribbean teaming up together. They released their guidelines. Carnival did their own thing separate from those two, but it's basically all the same focus. Combine it all up and you've got the Cruise Lines International Association, otherwise known as CLIA, announced mandatory core elements of health protocols. And the highlights of these core elements include, if you haven't heard yet, it's testing. Number one, first and foremost, 100% testing of passengers and crew for COVID-19 prior to embarkation. Mask wearing is going to be mandatory by all passengers and crew on board and during excursions whenever physical distancing cannot be maintained. Speaking of, physical distancing is also a core element as in terminals, onboard ships, private islands, and during shore excursions. Ventilation is another one. Air management and ventilation strategies to increase fresh air on board where feasible using enhanced filters and other technologies to mitigate risk. Medical capability, and this is a big one here, a risk-based response plans tailored for each ship to manage medical needs, dedicated cabin capacity allocated for isolation and other operational measures, and advanced arrangements with private providers for shore side quarantine, medical facilities, and transportation. And finally, wrapping up the core elements is shore excursions. You only permit shore excursions according to the cruise operator's prescribed protocols with strict adherence required of all passengers and denial of reboarding for any passengers that do not comply. So listen, this is great news. We finally had this. Well, so many people have been waiting for this since the summer when they shut down, the continued shutdown, and the CDC no sail order is being lifted at the end of this month. Hopefully it will stay lifted. Hopefully they will not extend that any further so we can get back to cruising here. But if you are going to cruise, if you're a travel advisor and you're sending clients out on future cruises, make sure they know the rules, make sure they follow the rules, because Dan, you and I both know what's going to end up happening here is naughty passengers.
Absolutely. And I think some of that might happen because even though it's great that they finally listed all this stuff out and you had some guidelines and protocols to follow off of, some of it is still kind of, I wouldn't say vague might not be the right word, but still kind of can be perceived one way or the other depending on who the person is. If, you know, you must wear masks on board All passengers, crew, during your excursions, whenever physically distanced measures cannot be maintained. So if you're like walking down the deck of the cruise ship and no one's around you, you can have it off, and then you have to put it back on if someone walks by you. I mean, there's a lot of things, a lot of different ways people can interpret that. I mean, and then I'm assuming that you can take it off when you go to sit down at like, are they going to close like certain bar areas or like restaurants? Obviously staying as far apart from people as possible would be good if you're sitting around each other. You know, it's just going to be interpreted one way or the other, I feel like, which can lead to a lot of these things that we see as naughty passengers, because people get into arguments and then, you know, it just hits the fan from there. I didn't see anything in here. I just looked at the Clio one, to be honest, but is there anything in the other ones about percentage capacities on certain ships or all cruise ships? Is there anything about that? Like they can have 100% capacity on these ships if they wanted?
No, I don't think that they have, set forth any percentage set. Now, I know we talked about that a few weeks ago on a couple episodes back about the reports of like 70%. And, you know, you mentioned how that could just be a, you know, them trying to highball and negotiate a number, which I think is going to be more in the 30 to 40% range, at least to start. 50% at max is my take on that, is where they should go, but it's not been confirmed how much they will on that. I think with your point to the physical distance, they can separate people out, you know, at restaurants. I think you're going to have to wear your mask when you enter, and then once you sit down and eat, just like you can at home, or just like as I've experienced at all-inclusive resorts, I think, which is, you're going to see some of that. And you can also look to Europe and how some of the success they've had. MSC Cruises has successfully had cruises up in the Mediterranean. We actually have a video up on Travel Pulse's Facebook page. You should really check that out. Highly encourage you to look at that and see what some of the passengers themselves are saying about cruising, if whether you're on the fence about it or not. You can hear from actual passengers on that over what they've experienced in the Mediterranean and Italy on that.
Yeah.
I think one part of the shore excursion, the private islands, where physical distancing can be maintained is they can space out beach chairs. I took it at that, you know, when you're like, I saw at the all-inclusive resorts, you know, you space out the beach chairs so you don't have to sit on a chair and wear your mask while you're trying to tan or just relax by the pool or relax by the ocean.
Yeah, and that'll definitely be a lot easier on those types of excursions because you're outside and everything. And I think a lot of this stuff just comes into play when it's either indoors or it's not fully, you know, outside, like sitting on a beach. But of course, you know, it's great to have these things in there. And I think that one of the big things, not only because a lot of, you know, the stuff came up at the, you know, bad PR for cruises to begin with back in March, February, and into April, and whenever they all got fully cut off, mainly because these are just, some of these cruise ships are just so massive and there's not really that many other things that have those many people in that, you know, big of a space, you know. It's not like, you know, going out to your local restaurant or grocery shop and whatever. A lot of those have a lot of people, but it's not, you know, hundreds if not thousands of people on a ship. So obviously they did have to come down with strict health protocols here. Hopefully they can take a lot of things that they've seen the hotel industry doing, some of those European cruises that you were mentioning there, and be able to figure it out. Obviously it's not going to, I don't think it's going to be 100% correct right from the get-go. There's going to be some tweaks and changes as we go, some things updated, changed as time goes on. I think it's a good start though, and hopefully we'll see that if they actually can go cruising here in 2020 and see how people react to these. Because like I said, every single person I've seen out in public, whether it's at airports, my local area, at different businesses, people are taking it extremely loosely. Some people very moderate, other people way over the edge of looking at paranoid in the rearview mirror. So definitely going to be, you know, have to, one of those things we're going to have to see how well it works out.
Absolutely. And you've got to stay diligent. And especially if you're a travel advisor, make sure your clients comply with those rules, because we saw it already with MSC, the first cruise back over in the Med, they kicked the family off because they didn't comply with the rules. So it's definitely going to happen. Unfortunately, we'll have to, you know, write about those stories, but hopefully that is kept to a minimum, you know, and a lot of people do follow the rules on that. But this is the first big step into getting back into actual cruising here out of US ports. And it's great to see. It's still a lot of questions, as Dan, you know, brought up. A lot of stuff remains to be seen, and we'll hopefully have those answers sooner than later. But moving on to airline news, Senator Rick Scott at it again. He dropped a proposal that would require TSA to implement temperature screenings at existing airport checkpoints in order to enhance the safety of passenger air travel amid the COVID-19 pandemic. To me personally, this should have been done nationwide already and at more than just a few of the test airports that it is right now. Now, that's my take on it, Dan. What are your thoughts on temperature screenings?
I think that it definitely should be a lot more than where it's at right now. Obviously, I just traveled again this past weekend domestically. That's two domestic trips by a plane for me in the past couple months. No temperature checks for me other than I think on both of these trips, one place I had one of the guns put up to your forehead, the temperature guns, not an actual gun.
Gotta specify that.
Yeah. But the ones that they're talking about in here is having the infrared temperature technology through cameras and stuff. I've read a lot about it just because I'm highly into a lot of technology and things like that. They said that that is probably the next best solution to having something like a traditional thermometer go in your mouth. However, it's a piece of technology, like any piece of technology out there. It can be faulty. It can have an inaccurate reading, especially if they have these cameras looking at large groups of people, depending on different lighting and backgrounds, the people, some might have high temperatures compared to others. Nonetheless, I think they should have multiple. If they want to pull someone aside and say, hey, you matched what we're looking for with people with their temperature screenings, we're going to need you to take, you know, like a, you know, an oral thermometer test or something, just like a secondary measure to see if they actually do meet that, just like they do if you have your bag go through, they pull it aside and they go through it. I think just if they just have the infrared things and they just tell people, nope, that thing says that you're gone, so we got to kick you out. Definitely a lot more of it is needed. I think they should use the technology to their advantage, but hopefully have a secondary thing there. Otherwise, people might lose it.
I'm with you all the way, man. Temperature checks for passengers of mass transit, it just makes sense. What doesn't make sense to me, though, is flights to nowhere, and they're selling out. Like, why? I mean, I know we talked about cruises to nowhere in last week's episode as a possible way to initially resume sailing if they decide to bring that back. They had it a few years ago, but if they decide to bring that back. But sitting in a plane with a really tiny window, you know, for sightseeing, you're just using so much more fuel. I don't get that. People buying these tickets must really love flying. But to me, though, I think you'd be better off doing like a smaller plane, a little jumper that has bigger windows, or, you know, just go skydiving if you really want some epic aerial views. Flights to nowhere. Dan, what do you think, man? I'm at a loss.
I'm not all on that as well. I'm assuming that these types of things, you would have to go through the entire process as if you were getting on a regular flight somewhere, which just adds on to it, which is crazy. If you really want to get a good view of the, you know, I think a lot of these were on the Australian coast or anything, I'm sure there's a lot of private small planes where you don't have to sit on a crowded plane full of people. You can get your own plane and get up in the air and look at it. I mean, you definitely don't need the 30,000 foot view for something like that. Just if you're that into sightseeing, I think that's you might need to get some professional medical help if you're actually going into this. I personally think get a drone, go in a helicopter. There's tons of small business tour operators that you can help support there to be able to put you up in one of those things. A lot of these are happening in Australia, so I don't exactly know. And some of these planes, they were talking about them having bigger windows, like they're good for this type of stuff. But yeah, no, I'm not buying the whole going through the entire airline boarding process just to get a good view and fly. I just take that in for whenever I actually do fly, and I enjoy it then, and I don't, you know, go back to just do that, you know. Just playing other ways you can get a nice view of some aerial shots. So that's kind of strange to me.
I'm with you on there, man. And speaking of strange, we've got another news in the travel world, canceling spring break. Some schools have concerns about students' anticipated travel activities, and around the country, colleges have been canceling spring break and adjusting their academic calendar. So Dan, are they jumping on this cancel too soon? I mean, it's September 22nd right now. Spring break is typically March and April of the following year. So I don't know, man.
Yeah, I think if they're looking at spring break, I know that's a big travel time for me. I mean, I didn't go to a big university as you did with Georgia, Eric. I went to a small school up in PA. I also played college baseball, so I didn't really have a spring break where you could just leave for a week and go party somewhere. So I'm not used to that being such a big thing that college students go and do. Obviously it is, but for the masses, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's way ahead of spring break. They should be looking at all the other breaks ahead of that. Every college has a fall break, then a Thanksgiving break, and then a month-long winter break. That break in the wintertime, they go home and they, you know, college kids will go home and see a lot of friends from high school or people just at home or whatever. You go around and still do stuff. You're still coming in contact with people. It's a little bit different than spring break, but I think at this point they're kind of jumping the gun on that. I think they should focus a little bit more on what's happening at their actual school, see how that thing goes. And there's been a lot of outbreaks at certain universities, so maybe that should be on the forefront instead of thinking it's spring break at this point. I think they should be focused on getting through the first semester to begin with, but yeah, definitely jumping the gun on that.
I'm with you there. One particular place that a lot of people do like to travel for spring break is Hawaii. And we've got some reopening news officially, finally. Hawaii is reopening October 15th. It's on, but you will need to provide a negative COVID test. So they have kind of been pushing back a lot. And we've talked about it a great deal, but it's really good to see that they are pushing forward. I'll keep the fingers crossed that it doesn't be pushed back again, you know, that anything can happen really, but it really feels like this one is finally it. And they're finally going to say, all right, this is it. You know, we'll go with the protocols of providing the negative COVID tests and you can bypass the quarantine on that. So we also have St. Martin updated its entry requirements for U.S. travelers. You know, you're going to have to provide a negative COVID test within 5 days of arrival there. And the British Virgin Islands announced it will open in December. So for more insight on where you can travel internationally this fall, head over to TravelPulse.com. Check out our gallery feature on popular destinations open to Americans this fall. And if you've been enjoying the podcast so far, we'd really love it if you could leave us a review on wherever you listen, whether it's Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, all that good stuff. We love feedback. You can hit us up too at podcast@TravelPulse.com.
Absolutely. Please do reach out to us. Leave us a review. I'm going to go through an email we received just hours before recording this week's episode from Jamie Anderson. She reached out to us. She's the owner of a small independent travel agency in the Pacific Northwest. And she wrote to us saying that, like most, their small family-owned travel business have been impacted tremendously by COVID right now. And she feels that right now the public is really looking for ways to help small businesses while at the same time beginning to think about traveling again. I can't agree more with that. The window won't last forever, though, and she wants to get messaging out right now. So what Jamie did was working on messaging for her own to share with her own clients and encouraging them to support her own local business by utilizing the services that they offer. But she eventually realized that this could be a much bigger idea that could positively affect more than just her own agency. So she created this neat short little video that's basically falls around this hashtag, call your TA, hashtag call your TA, exactly how it sounds. And it's a message saying that, you know, we're here for you, be here for us now. And it goes through, different video and some overlaid captions, just showcasing why you should call your TA and support your local TAs and support small businesses. She's purposely made this unbranded so that she can help other people. She has no hidden agenda behind this. It's not helping promote her own agency or has anything with her own agency tied to it. She even created it on a whole separate Call Your TA YouTube account. I think this is great. Check out the video. I think, Eric, we could probably post it with this podcast or it'll be up on Travel Pulse so you can easily find it. And she has a link inside of the description on YouTube where you can download the video and share it with your own clients. This would be a great, for my background in social media marketing, this would be a great piece of content that you can put out on your own social media channels. We get a lot of great engagement on stuff when we talk about how people can support their travel agents right now. And this video, if you share that out on your social media, I think it would go over really well. And I think the video speaks to a lot of great reasons why people should support them. And she does believe that this also has room to grow. So if there's any suppliers out there listening that wants to get put in touch with Jamie Anderson, let us know. Obviously, she doesn't want to promote her own business or agency incredibly in this. It's just about getting out messaging that can help the industry. So definitely check out that video. We'll post that up along with this podcast. Any suppliers, reach out to us or get in touch with that video through that video and see if we can get this spreading throughout the industry. It's a really, really good message.
Definitely. We would love to see it. We'd love to see any help that can be provided to travel agencies, travel advisors out there really pushing for it, really, really need the help in general. And now joining us on the podcast, travel expert and hospitality expert as well, Anthony Melchiori. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. So for those who may not know you, could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your role in the travel industry?
Well, I've been in the hotel business for 35 years. I started left the Air Force after 4.5 years and ran iconic hotels like the Plaza, the Algonquin, Nickelodeon Resorts, and was vice president of Tishman Asset Management. And then one day I decided to do a TV show called Hotel Impossible, and that's kept me busy for the last 9 years.
Fantastic. So a lot of hotel experience there. So we're just going to jump right into, you know, what's been going on with hotels and stuff and get your take on that. So according to a recent LA Times article, many industry experts have said that they believe that there will be massive hotel closures coming soon. I just want to get, what do you think about that? Are you seeing any positive signs for the future of the industry and the hotels? Any insights to 2021 looking better at all?
I just did a video for the hospitality industry that went to Congress, asking Congress to help us. Again, not a bailout, but we need help. We need help with bank regulations. We need help with CMBS loans. We need help with liquidity. And right now they're playing, you know, Democrats against Republicans, and it's hurting the business. To get to put it in perspective, out of our GDP, $600 billion comes from travel, and $3 trillion, $600 billion. We are the second largest industry in our country. Our country and economy goes the way of the travel industry, period. In New York City, 62 million visitors visited us last year. So right now, the summer bump was great because it was a lot of leisure travel, a lot of people near parks and near beaches. But now corporate travel, group travel, convention travel, which is really the heart and soul and bread and butter of our business, is gone. So you just heard that Europe just started to lock down again. France, England, Portugal, the Netherlands, they're all going on lockdown again. That sends, or some countries out of those countries, that sends really bad message to the person that's traveling. Also, I just had somebody that owns a big collection of five-star hotels in New York, in Europe, on my podcast about an hour ago. And when I asked him, what does he think of New York's of America, he literally smiled and couldn't answer the question because it's such a crap show right now with the way we're handling everything that he kind of laughed. He said he will tell me that he has four friends in America, four separate friends from four separate groups of people. And he said they're all coming back to their main country.
Wow.
So right now, so what does the future of travel look like? It looks like, what does the vaccine look like? And what is the health of our country look like as far as being able to attract Europeans and people from abroad? So right now, I think we've all come to the decision that if there's no vaccine, we're not getting back to normal anytime soon. In the travel industry, still 43% of all employees are out of work.
Jeez. Yeah, big numbers like that is what we've been hearing. And I think we agree once you get that vaccine in place, it'll help the industry so massively. And that's what we're really going to need. That's what a lot of people are asking about. And a lot of listeners here, we have a lot of travel advisor listeners. And we get a lot of different questions asking about hotels that they should be booking coming in the future here. Do you have any insight of like what types of hotels for advisors? We're talking a lot about some meetings and conventions, business travel, corporate travel coming up a lot. Is there any types of hotels that you would recommend that travel advisors look into, become a lot more familiar with? Like what types out there would you recommend?
I don't typically recommend hotels, but what I would tell you is the outdoor corridor hotels, which were really kind of people didn't want, brands didn't want outdoor corridor hotels. Now outdoor corridor hotels, especially near beaches, especially near national parks, especially near a lot of outdoors, are kind of in again because people want their key, go to the room, and they have control over their destiny. So that's been a big, we've seen our economy segment really increase more so than any other segment. You know, leisure, five-star hotels have really suffered. They still, during the leisure time, if they're near a park or they're near an ocean, they're going to do okay. But I think the five-star hotels are the last to come back. Because it needs a lot of corporate business, needs a lot of conventions to drive that business. But the economy scale, the Best Westerns and the Motel 6s, believe it or not, those have been thriving in a lot of markets. And in some markets, actually, have done been busier than last year. So right now, you have to choose based on what you're comfortable with. There's reviews are more important than ever. Back in, 6 months ago, reviews, I always talked about reviews. Reviews are important and very important. Now they're critical. They're the lifeblood of hotels because the first thing you're going to do is if you all of a sudden decide after 6 months of staying home, I'm going to take a business trip, or actually I'm going to Vegas next week on a business trip, and I'm going to the hotel I'm most comfortable in, the Nomad, which is opening next week. And I know I'm going to be okay. So right now, whether you're a hardened traveler or you're a leisure traveler, the first thing you're going to look on online is, are they handling the protocols to my satisfaction? The protocols for your satisfaction may be no mask, and I don't want any barriers. And somebody may look at the hotel and go, "Oh, good, they're doing great because everybody's getting COVID, and that's where I want to go." And then there's most people that are sane and saying, "Hey, I want a place that has good PPE and is really taking this seriously, and I can also enjoy myself." Because I have traveled a little bit. Just I went to Connecticut and Atlantic City for two shows, and I was comfortable. Everybody was doing what they were supposed to do, and I was very comfortable. So really, I think more now than ever, if you're comfortable, like my favorite brand from an airline is Delta, and my favorite hotel brand, believe it or not, is Holiday Inn Express, because when I travel for the show, I'm with my crew and I want to stay with my crew. And so those are the brands I'll probably stick with. And the five-star brands, I'm a little bit more take it as I come, depending on what city I'm in.
Interesting. So for those travelers out there who are going to be booking something soon or looking to 2021, are there any new trends or experiences that guests can expect out of hotels moving forward? I know we've seen up on Travel Pulse, we posted some stories, some technology stories about like robot cleaning and other efforts for contactless experiences. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm a spokesperson for a company called CertQ, which actually come out with something called CBot. And if you look at my podcast, you'll see that we were in Manhattan last week and we rolled it out. And basically what CBot is think of one of those, you know, those wireless vacuums that go around your house, one of those robots. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And then look at like a tower fan. You can see it on my social media. And then look like one of those tower fans that you have in your house. And it basically, it looks like that. It comes off of its stand when a guest checks out. It's tied into the property management system. And it cleans the air and cleans the room with a spray that is very safe and that's found in hospitals. So a housekeeper can come in, clean, feel safe. If somebody was sneezing and there's stuff in the air or there's contaminants on the furniture, then when she's done, the property management system alerts the CBOT to say, hey, she's done, now clean the room again. So now it seals the room again, and now that room's 100% sealed. So things like that you're going to see more of. Even after COVID, this is just a good to have because, I've traveled, I don't know, 250,000 miles for the last 10 years each year and been to 50 countries in 48 states. I get colds all the time. I have a cold like every week when I'm traveling. And so this is not only good for COVID, but it's good for, you know, sanitizing all surfaces. So that's one thing, but keyless entry is huge. If a brand like Marriott had it in the works, they've just fast tracked it. Hilton had keyless entry before. They're fast tracking the next technology. So I think you're going to see a lot more technology. And what I talk about in my consulting business, I tell all these brands, is the touch points that you have in the hotel or in your travel experience are more important. So that person that you deal with, whether it be a houseman or whether it be a bellman or whether it be a front desk clerk, is more important because a lot of touch points are going away because of technology. But what hopefully we're not going to get to in the hotel industry, we come to technology last and we usually screw it up and we put it on things that people really don't want, like kiosk. Nobody wanted a kiosk. Kiosk went away. They didn't like them. They want keyless entry. So I just hope that we don't do technology for technology's sake. Also, one of the things you have to look for is you have to really make sure you know what their PPE guidelines are. And are they going to serve breakfast? Are they going to serve room service? That is a big deal right now. A lot of hotels are taking this as an excuse to not have breakfast. It's like, well, we can't serve breakfast. But you can serve breakfast, but you have to serve it in a more defined way. You have to really understand how to serve it based on your local policies. And also, a guest wants it. So you're going to have to serve breakfast. The hotels, they're getting in trouble. They're just saying, hey, we don't have room service. We don't have breakfast. And, you know, call Uber Eats. Good luck. If you're doing it and you're a little bit more sympathetic to your guests, your traveling guests, that's going to be a hotel that's doing well. So there's a lot of different things happening right now. But I will tell you, our industry, one of the things I do on my podcast called Checking In with Anthony and Glenn is we talk to CEOs of Hilton, Marriott. We talk to the best of the best and the brightest of the brightest on our show. And there is a sense of, wow. Okay, we're in second gear. We're going to be in second gear for another 6 months. So whereas March, okay, April comes around, May comes around, we'll be back at it. All right, June, July comes around, we'll be back at it. By July, we're like, okay, we're not going to be back at it till next year. So until you see major conventions come back, until you see cities like New York, LA, San Francisco, and Vegas come back, we're going to be in this for a while.
Yeah. And I agree with what you were saying there about the technology aspect as well. I would love to see a lot more of the technology, not for technology's sake, but what people want. And I have heard and we've seen a lot about people wanting those breakfasts at different hotels and everything. So there's a lot to take in and a lot to know about where you're booking or where you're going to. And I wanted to ask you too, during your time as a host on Hotel Impossible, you saw some rough situations and were able to help some businesses. And because we have a lot of small business owners, travel advisors out there to listen. Right now, they've been struggling to keep businesses afloat and have been dying for information and have been hungry for it about what they can do in such a rough situation that nobody could have predicted. What would be your best advice to these types of business owners that are in the travel industry, such as agents and advisors out there right now that book a lot of hotels?
Well, I was talking to, Randi Zuckerberg, who's Mark Zuckerberg's sister. I happened to be on a panel with her, and I got about a year ago, I got 10 minutes with her. And I asked her, I said, okay, what do you, and this is the woman that basically invented FaceTime. So I was like, what, Facebook Live. Okay. I said, what should we be doing? And I've had a podcast now for 2 years. And she said, podcast. That's what you should be doing. The future is podcasting. So if I had a small business, I know I would individually get in touch with every one of my clients, and I would start a podcast, and I would talk about travel, and I would talk about the ups and downs of my business. But podcasting, social media right now is critical. And what I talk about, I'm writing a book called Build Your Personal Brand. And what I talk a lot about is mindset. We all have been through it. I don't care if it's you guys or it's me or anybody. Right now, in the last 6-7 months, if you haven't had a moment where you thought you were losing your mind, then I don't want to be around you, because that means you're not a human being. So I think mindset's really important, and really tapping into what's kind of gotten you through to this far in your career and your life. So a small business owner are usually scrappy. They're entrepreneurs, and they see things that no one else sees. They're thinking 6 months ahead before anybody else. So just being scrappy and keeping your head down, that may mean close your business. That may mean change your business model. Like express spas in the airports, we've all seen them when you're walking through the airports, the people that give massages, and now COVID testing. So they're doing COVID testing. So if you want a rapid response, which I do when I travel, when I get home, I want to know if I have it or not. You go in there and they start a pilot program in JFK. That's really changing their business. And that's interesting. I'm very passionate and addicted to creative people. And so if you're sitting there wallowing in your sorrow of this sucks. Okay, now what? And so same thing I tell everybody around me, this sucks for all of us. There's not one of us that hasn't been affected by this around the world, but now what? What are you going to do? And that could be, if you have your business, like I have a little cash, maybe I'll just close it for a little while, take it easy, get a hobby until things come back. If you don't have a lot of cash, then you have to reinvent yourself of what can you provide to your client today that may have nothing to do with travel. You're not a travel expert. You're an entrepreneur. And like I tell my daughter who's in theater, you're not an actor. You're not in theater. You're an entrepreneur, because you have to make your gigs. You have to make your money. You have to make your cash flow. So people have got to look at it as an entrepreneur and not look at it as a travel expert. Like, how do you keep the lights on? You may sell pencils to keep your lights on. I have no idea. If the naked cowboy in Times Square goes away, I may take his job. I don't know, whatever you need to do to put food on the table, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mindset is totally key there. I think a lot of advisors can take away from that. And we've seen some cruise travel advisors that can't sell cruises right now, so they've shifted over to land tours and hotels and stuff, and trying to make a float that way. So yeah, mindset is key, and just keep persevering and going through, which, I see a lot. I'm not from New York, but I see that a lot from New Yorkers. Yesterday was National New York Day, but we have seen some New York been labeled as dead by some pundits out there. As a New Yorker yourself, what's your take on that? What have you seen from New York City lately, and how do you think the city's tourism can rebound?
I will tell you, if you hear that Anthony Mercury died, don't get too close to the casket, okay? Because I'm coming back. New York, I think Jerry Seinfeld did a good job of challenging that writer who wrote that New York City's dead. New York City is like a person that is like myself. I'll give you an example. I'm 55 years old, and I have to work a little harder to do what I did when I was 20. And so New York's got to work a little harder to come back to where it was. New York will be back. New York is not as bad as people say it is, but it's not as good as it used to be. And I've been in New York in the last couple of weeks to look to see if my best friend, which is New York, died. And I went through it, and I'll tell you, there's a lot of people on outside cafes. There's a lot of people working. There's a lot of people going through it. When you get into Times Square, it's a little sad because, you know, Broadway is the lifeblood of America, I think, is the lifeblood of New York City. And it's not on fire. So it's not working. So that's a little sad. So New York has changed, obviously, in the last 6 months. There's going to be a lot of real estate problems. There's going to be a lot of retail problems. There's going to be a lot of owners holding the bag because of a lot of ridiculous policies that this mayor is doing. I think our mayor is helping destroy our city quicker. And I won't get political, but no one likes him on either side of the aisle because of some of his policies. He's not really helping anyone. So, but New York itself will be back. We'll be back better, bigger and better. And don't ever count the New Yorker out. Like I said, if they say I'm not around anymore, you don't want to get too close to the casket because I'm coming back.
Well, yeah, I agree with you on that. I'd never count the New Yorkers out. I'm from South Jersey myself, grew up around Philly, and even people in Philadelphia say that about New York. I can definitely say that for sure. And enjoy going there, and I think it'll be back and better than ever.
Well, you know what? It's also, it's not only about New Yorkers, right? It's not about New Yorkers. It's what feeds New York. The world feeds us. So when the New York feeds us with our energy and also with the economy, we take it and we're like, we want it. We want your energy. We want you to come in. We want to show you our city. We want to perform for you. We want to showcase our food. We want to showcase our retail stores. We want you to come down to the financial district. We want you to come to New York. So it's not New Yorkers only that are feeding the city. It's the world. The world feeds us. So when the world's ready to come back, we're gonna invite them back with open arms. You know, and I mean, New York. I remember when I got out of the Air Force, I looked at the skyline and I said, everybody in New York will know my name one day. Everybody in the hotel business will know my name. And New York allowed that for me. New York opened its heart up for me, even though I grew up in Brooklyn, and allowed me to really excel into what I wanted to do. My dream was to work at the Plaza Hotel. 10 months after the military, I was working at the Plaza Hotel. My dream was to run a legendary hotel like the Algonquin. I was running that. Then I was working for the biggest real estate people in the world. And then I got a TV show. New York gave me everything. So New York's not going anywhere.
Exactly. 100%. We appreciate you coming on and giving out all this information. You're really a great model for success within the hotel and travel industry in general. And, you know, I'm sure everybody's going to take a lot of great information from this episode. And if you want to let everyone know where they can find you, whether it's social media, your podcast, anything you want to let people know where they can find you and listen to you at.
Well, at Anthony Hotels, anywhere you want to be on the internet, anthonymocuri.com. And also every day at noon, we do a live LinkedIn and Facebook video podcast where we have everybody from Horst Schulze, who created Ritz-Carlton, to the vice chairman of MGM, John Flynn. We've had every major player on in the industry. And it's amazing during this time that once we started doing it, we had a podcast before, but we started doing live video immediately when COVID hit because we wanted to be the touch point for everybody in our industry. And the names that we're getting on our show and the power brokers we're getting on our show has just been phenomenal. So every day at 12 o'clock from 12 to 1, we're there live. And it's probably a good place for you guys to look to also bring on people on your podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah, we would love that. And it sounds like it's going to be, you know, great wealth of information on there every single day. We would love to have a lot of those people on. We've talked to some different hotel industry folks, CEOs and presidents of different chains.
People are listening to it. We have 750,000 unique visits every month. So we're getting some huge, we're getting huge numbers. And because we're staying to what we know travel. And I'll tell you, I got an education like I've never been educated like this before. I probably know every fact you need to know about the industry, all because of the last 6 months, everybody coming in, just giving us all kinds of facts. It's been phenomenal.
That's great. It sounds like a really good community of people, different sharing and all the different information you can take from there. And definitely going to check that out myself. And I urge every other person out there listening to this to do that. It sounds amazing. And we appreciate you coming on today, Anthony, and joining us on this episode of our podcast. We really do appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good luck. And thanks for having me. And you're invited to my podcast anytime.
Awesome. Awesome. We're going to definitely look into that. We would love that.
Thanks again to Anthony for coming on the show. We really appreciated that. Great insight for travelers of all kinds. If you would like to be on the show or you have topics you'd like us to discuss, again, reach out to us at podcast@travelpulse.com. Leave us a review if you've enjoyed the show. We love feedback anywhere and everywhere. Thanks for listening and have a great week.